This is Fresh Air. Steven Spielberg spent $65 million on the movie Jurassic Park, and it shows in the special effects. Spielberg asked award-winning creature creator Stan Winston to design the dinosaurs. Winston had shown off his considerable talents in The Terminator, T2, Aliens, Predator, Edward Scissorhands, and Batman Returns. And like the eccentric theme park owner in the movie, Winston has brought dinosaurs back to life. Through the wizardry of robotics and puppetry and computers, these dinosaurs are a far cry from their stop-action relatives in previous movies. Winston has received 3 Oscars and 2 Emmys for his work. He says he doesn't do special effects. Rather, he prefers to describe himself as a designer and creator of characters for film. Winston told me his dinosaurs live up to paleontologists' ideas of how dinosaurs walk and move and look.
We were very, very accurate with what is known. Naturally, there is only so much known, so there was a certain amount of instinct and choice that we put into the dinosaurs that just is, in fact, based on that, because people don't know, including paleontologists. No one knows exactly what a dinosaur looks like. No one knows exactly what the skin texture is. No one knows exactly what the colorations are, exactly what the muscle structure is, or how they lived. It's all hypothesis. What we do know is what the bone structure is exactly, and you can follow that and then follow the different thoughts of paleontologists of how these creatures lived, and basing it on that knowledge and animals that are in existence today that would have possibly somewhat the same kind of lifestyle or the same sort of weight factor, using life that exists today and all of this knowledge, we put together our version of what we feel is the most accurate representation of a dinosaur today.
And how much artistic license did you feel that you had? Obviously wanting to be true to what is known about dinosaurs, but also knowing that this is a piece of fictional drama. And how much artistic license did you have, you think, to embellish what is known about dinosaurs?
We didn't take any artistic license. Artistic license would be, in fact, altering what we know about dinosaurs. And we did not alter what we know about dinosaurs. What we did do, but it is not artistic license, is, for instance, there is a Dilophosaur. That's the spitter in Jurassic Park. There is no knowledge of any dinosaur that spit poisonous venom. But if, in fact, you talk to a paleontologist, and we did, there is no knowledge that a dinosaur did not spit poisonous venom. This is something that no one can possibly know. The Dilophosaur in our movie is smaller than the largest Dilophosaur that is known. I mean, Dilophosaurs grow to 6 and 7 feet tall. Our Dilophosaur was between 3 and 4 feet tall. The dramatic purpose of that was this particular Dilophosaur, we wanted to the story purposes, to first feel that it was like a cute kind of dog, a small dinosaur that was interesting and had this little attitude of, that's an interesting looking dinosaur, and then be shocked when in fact this guy ended up spitting the killer loogie and killing you. But the fact of the matter is that Dilophosaurs were not born 7 feet tall. They had to grow to 7 feet tall. So in fact, when you see one that is 3.5 feet tall, all you have to do to say that it is totally real is though that this is a young Dilophosaur. It's not full grown.
Now, anyone that's seen the movie will say that this T-Rex looks absolutely and utterly real. What does this T-Rex look like on the inside?
If you stripped off the skin and the movable cores, which we call the muscle structures underneath it, it would be probably as interesting to you as seeing him with his skin on. You could do another movie about this enormous robotic character of the future. If you took what you think of as being one of the most interesting characters in history as being the Terminator, the endoskeleton that was in the Terminator, you know, that thing that was under Arnold.
Sure.
That's what you'd have, only it was 9,000 pounds and 40 feet long and did all of that. You would see an extremely real and organic and lifelike robot.
Well, what's amazing, too, is the fluidity of the movement. And I would think that the larger a robot or the larger a creature, the more difficult it is to get this.
The fluidity of motion, that ability to get rid of that robotic jerkiness that you have always been aware of in robots, no matter how good they've been, getting that kind of movement is something, especially with speed and weight and size like that, is something that's never been done before. The way we did it was by using the computer to help us, using things called accelerometers, which measure speed instantaneously and adjust through a computer system that speed, and putting these accelerometers at different areas of movement, places of movement, and very quickly, I would say, like, for instance, on the nose of the T-Rex, it would be an accelerometer, and then two joints down into his neck, another accelerometer. And what happens, the reason you get a robotic jerkiness, is you have a hard and heavy movement against a rigid base, whereas when you take your arm and move it quickly from right to left, it doesn't jerk because your body acts as a shock absorber. When you're talking about a machine, you have no built-in shock absorber, so to speak, because you're talking about something that is rigidly mounted, and each move is controlled. So although there is movement, that movement has to be controlled. So what these had to do was, in fact, create that shock-absorbing movement so that once you saw the speed of something coming to a... You couldn't see it, but the computer could, and these little chips could see it so quickly. Once the nose got quickly to its stop point, the minute it got to it, not the minute, the millisecond it got to that stop point, the other accelerometer would kick in and move the next joint in the opposite direction just slightly so that it would act as a shock absorber. So it became an organic thing. And then the next one down the line would do the same thing. All of these little computer chips compensating for quick and sudden movements that suddenly come to a stop but don't have any jerky, like, wagga wagga bouncing at the stop because it really never does come to a stop.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then I want to come back and talk some more. And my guest today on Fresh Air is Stan Winston, and he created the live-action dinosaurs for Steven Spielberg's movie Jurassic Park, and he has designed and created characters for many other films, including Aliens, Terminator, T2, Predator, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns, and more. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking today with Stan Winston, and Stan Winston created the live-action dinosaurs for Steven Spielberg's new movie, Jurassic Park. You've worked with several directors that have a very strong visual sense. I'm thinking of Steven Spielberg, James Cameron for Terminator and T2, and also for Tim Burton, Batman, and Edward Scissorhands. Is your collaboration very different with each of these directors?
Absolutely. The collaboration is always different with each director. Your job when you're creating a character in a film, along with bringing your artistic eye, your creative input to it, is to help a director establish his vision on screen. A film is a director's media. If a film works, it's due to the director. If a film doesn't work, it's due to a director. When you work with someone like Jim Cameron, he has a very, very specific vision of what he wants to see. And so it is the challenge is to do exactly what he sees. Jim, when he first came to me with the Terminator, to do the first Terminator, he had a painting that he had done of the endoskeleton. That endoskeleton was totally a Jim Cameron vision, which was in detail painted and finished, and it was a matter of me then taking that endoskeleton and translating it to three dimensions sculpturally, and then for it to perform. But he knew exactly what he wanted. Same thing with Aliens and the Alien Queen. Jim had, you know, I did my sketches, and Jim and I would sketch together. But in final analysis, he is a brilliant artist, also, and so he is very specific, detail specific. with what he wants. And that's a challenge within itself. With Tim Burton, on a different level, Tim comes from a cartoon background. He was a Disney cartoonist, and he does little lovely, wonderful little abstract cartoons of the characters that he wants. And then it would be my job to take this sort of abstract vision, keep the essence of Tim Burton, and then bring a reality to it, bring the reality that I have a sort of a foothold in reality, bring that to it, but make sure that there maintains the whimsy and the theatricality of a Tim Burton character, which you see in Edward Scissorhands, you see in Danny DeVito's Penguin in Batman Returns. I almost feel that to a certain extent the most parallel to my what my vision would be, the easiest and the most fun was actually working with Steven Spielberg. I think we saw pretty much exactly the same stuff.
And what happens to the dinosaurs or the alien queen or some of the other creatures that you've created? What do they get stored away somewhere? Are they
well? Many of the characters that I've created over the years, they live in a display at my studio, and some of them, like the Queen Alien, has been on tour for many years now through the Museum of Science and Industry, and many of the dinosaurs are now on display in New York at the Museum of Natural History, I believe. I'm not exactly sure of the museum. I haven't been there, but they are on display because they are museum quality. And so fortunately, there are many of the pieces are in museums now.
Stan Winston, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stan Winston designed and created the live-action dinosaurs for Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park. This is Fresh Air.